a meeting of minds at OrgCon. Like I say, every time I try to type that into my Twitter, it comes up orgy. So maybe this should be called an orgy of minds.
Mine comes up organ, actually. So you're clearly trying. Clearly your phone is listening to your sort of mental processes and realises what you really need to settle down on a Saturday, Christian.
Is my smartphone really that smart? Who are you?
I'm Bill Thompson. That'll do.
I'm Catherine Corrick.
It's true. Lots of words beginning with org are quite complicated and take you to strange places. It's William Heath.
It's Adriana. I think it's more like meeting of bodies so far.
I'm Guy Herbert, and I'm absolutely fascinated by the tea cosy that your phone is wearing.
It's called a spoffle, which I think is a made-up word. Mic shield. Today, thought that pops into your head.
I think it's fantastic that the Open Rights Group has reached the point where it can get several hundred people into a large room to talk about the issues that matter. The failure that we had over the Digital Economy Act hasn't caused us all just to give up in despair and go back to our homes and sort of sit there sobbing into our tea or coffee. And that there's a real sense that campaigning is necessary continuously, that we can start to educate the politicians and the wider public about these issues, that people are listening, and that the way that digital tools, services, all that stuff has started affecting every aspect of society means that the need for an understanding of what these technologies do, how they affect society, and what we can do about it as concerned and active citizens is still paramount. So I'm really enthusiastic about today.
I'm learning once again that Bill Thompson can just at the drop of a hat talk sense. It's great to see people, I think, but also my fear before I came was this could be preaching to the converted rather than actually be something that can take arguments forward. And I think that's actually what's happened. I've been really pleasantly surprised at speakers. Who is the law Duke from Duke University?
Boyle.
James Boyle was absolutely amazing this morning. Yeah. He was just, you know, and
sheer
just
quality.
Yeah, but also kind of balance as well.
That's right. Pray you never have to go on stage after Jamie Boyle.
No. And I just think the MPs as well, just reminding everyone that there's better ways to communicate, and we need to, if you're going to kind of be listened to, then you have to actually be ready to kind of, and willing not to be angry, but actually just to have, be willing to be useful.
Yeah, Boyle was worth every second of listening to him. He was worth every drop of kerosene in, you know, in the aeroplane to bring him over, I think. I think that he's not just a brilliant academic, but he's really, really funny. You know, like sort of Tom Lehrer tradition of American academics who just crack you up. But also he's a great motivator because, you know, he placed org, you know, in a time place. He said that this is the stage you're at. This is how much you've got to do. This is how important it is. You know, next stage, he appears in front of Tom Watson's select committee. You know, we plug him directly into that. Then the right messages will be getting to the right places.
Can I just point out that Boyle is Scottish? Though he's from Duke, he's
Scottish, but flown in from America, indeed. And I loved his line that his antecedent to Boyle had invented the perfect law for academics, which is that hot air expands.
Yes, I'm going to add to the Boyle eulogies here. I remember his talk at Cambridge a couple of years ago, and that was absolutely one of the best talks in copyright. So what I like about his approach is the historical perspective, which shows that none of those pressures that we're facing today are new. And also, I think his argument could be used to argue against a lot of the politicians who say, well, how are the artists going to be paid? The idea, well, copyright wasn't invented to protect their business models. It was invented to increase innovation, and the internet seems to be doing just well in that respect. Thank you very much. I mean, it's a very simplified way, but at least the debate could go that direction. As far as the rest of the conference, the second debate. Can you have two keynotes? Always bothered me. Not my kind of scene. I think the debate, the whole fight, has gone a bit too political for my taste. I'd rather go, just like Boyle is doing with copyright, to the sort of historical perspective of the internet and go back to the basics of the internet and try to recreate some of the cyber spirit revolutionary, which actually I think is about time. I think that's where we need to get new spirit again.
Definitely. I think there was a shortage of balaclavas in the cloakroom. I thought there may be a little bit more of a call to action. There's a lot of talking, some fantastic ideas. It's just finding a way to implement, maybe.
Agreed. More of a revolution and less of the debate or something.
I think you can have more than one keynote. It's called a chord. I'm very glad that today I've not been called upon to agree with anybody, because I'm not very good at that. But one of the pleasant things about dealing with people in org is that you don't have to agree with anybody, and they'll still invite you back.
We're sat in the corridor. A gentleman has wandered up. Please introduce yourself.
Who am I introducing myself to, and why?
Do we need copyright clearance for your voice? We're speaking to the rest. We're speaking to the rest of the world.
Well, it depends where this is going.
Wow. Welcome to social media, sir.
Well, I think Casper could teach you a lot about social media, and he's well to be very cautious, because, of course, one of the bigger problems these days is that people are far too willing to disclose information to any hairy man in a T-shirt who wanders up to them claiming to be from the government or anywhere else. Exactly.
Especially when the one word I will read out on his badge says, Microsoft. We've already met.
Yes, so I'm Casper Bowden, and I'm Chief Privacy Advisor to Microsoft's Worldwide Technology Office, which would take more time than we have to explain, but I'm not here representing Microsoft today.
A lot of people coming up to you earlier on in the corridor saying that you are a bastion of sensibility in what you're doing, and you took it very humbly, but I think that's quite a big thing to say.
Casper refudiate that it was sensibility. refudiate with an F. I should just say, Casper missed the introduction, that this is Christian's audio boo, documentarily. That's what we're doing.
Just so you know, it's on the record.
Yeah. Not technically live, but it will be up there later.
I love hanging out with clever people. It's the best thing ever. And I'd like to refudiate that too.
I'm currently trying to multitask on my iPhone 4 to open the dictionary to find out what refudiate means. The fiction.
Okay, refudiate is the word created by Sarah Palin in a tweet last week when she meant to type repudiate and then compounded the errors by comparing herself with Shakespeare. And William was making the very pertinent point that what you're talking about is not sensibility, but in fact, I'm not sure which word you want.
Sensibleness.
Sensibleness, yes. Casper is one of the clever people who's made the world a better place by thinking seriously and sensibly about the privacy implications of the toys we've decided we want to build.
Fantastic. If Bill Thompson said it, it's gospel. Is it gospel? Correct me on that now.
As an atheist, you refudiate that.
So, say, for example, somebody came out of today and they thought, okay, I really, really do want to go the next step. I actually want to do something serious. I'm not talking about seriously illegal, although we're all doing that anyway. What should they do?
Well, actually, there are too many different things to do. There isn't one single thing. For me at the moment, the key thing for anyone is to inform yourself about the issues before you decide what to do. Because I could say, oh, join the open rights group, but that's then just ticking another box. It's like signing up for a Facebook course. Okay, I've joined it, I think it's good, but I've made my own choice. People should be making their own choices. So it's actually read and learn and understand just how much what is happening at the moment in legislation, not just in the UK, but in Europe and around the world, with things like the ACTA Treaty, will affect your life and the things you want to do. Learn about that and then decide whether you're happy with it, I don't think many people will be, and what you think is the appropriate way for you in your life to act to change that.
And talk to other people about it. Find out what they think. Find out if they do think. Because one of the problems that we have is that not many people are thinking about this stuff. You don't need to have a technical background to worry about privacy or your rights or what's happening when you do things online. But many people just don't think, they're just clicking.
I'd say that the day's been really strong on copyright, and copyright isn't my issue, so it's been a learning curve for me to find out about that. I'm more interested in surveillance, the major government IT projects and the expenditure on them, and flows of personal data. So I'm looking forward to that part coming in, but the bit on copyright has been fantastic.
Well, to those people listening, I would say there's one thing which is very important for the preservation of privacy in our society on the internet. And it's a question I'm going to be asking the audience later today, which is, have you ever done a subject access request? Have you ever exercised your right to know what information an organization knows about you? Because this is really the crown jewel in the European privacy regime. It's a right which exists most strongly and in a least qualified way in Europe. It's not very strong in the UK, it has to be said, but that's why we actually need people to use this right, because otherwise it's going to fall away and it's going to be lobbied away possibly as soon as a couple of years' time. And basically, pretty much any organisation, from GCHQ to the Home Office to some of the large online service providers, you can just write them a letter, or indeed write them an email, asserting your right under Section 7 of the Data Protection Act, and they have to give you back within 40 days literally all the information they know about you for a flat fee of £10. It's an incredibly powerful right, but actually very few people know it exists, and even fewer people have ever used it.
Is there any danger in doing this that you might be flagging yourself in some way, not being paranoid much? I've had some incidents really that make me think there might be something written down somewhere.
Well, the law's pretty good, actually, in preventing that happening, in theory. But, of course, whether or not that does happen is another matter, because I think one of the reasons why it would be beneficial for more people to use this right is, at the moment, data controller organisations, which is pretty much any organisation, often they only get one of these things once in a blue moon. And so that means they tend to make it up as they go along, and they tend not to have a sort of fairly rigorous process inside the organisation of understanding what they should do with these requests. But it essentially, it makes everyone can now be, as it were, a privacy campaigner in their own life. You know, £10 is a small amount of money to some people, a large amount of money to other people. That's a question in itself. Is £10 now an unreasonable fee, given the number of organisations that we have to deal with online? But if you really want to do something to investigate the state of privacy in Britain, this is something very practical you can do. You know, think of it as like a little piggy bank you set aside. You think of which organisations are actually more important for privacy in your life, and just try and see what you get back.
Definitely. I'm thinking this will make great blog fodder.
And to make it easier, if you Google it, there are people who have published letters they send to organisations or join another small thing. I'm not for joining big organisations, but just groups of people who are already trying to do that if people have no idea where to start.
Are we allowed to correct the errors they may have in our files?
Yes, you are. And if you find errors, technically they don't actually have to change the master file. Technically they just have to put a note on the file that this information is wrong and the correct information is X, but you have a right in that effective sense to correct it, yes.
I did that with Orange. I got about 800 photocopied pages back, and up on page 657 was the fake signature that somebody else had used to start a second phone account in my name with Orange.
How interesting.
Wow. Anybody want to wrap up?
Let's go get them, boys, girls. There's work to be done. Let's go out and do it.
I edit in a rallying cry to finish.
As a private individual, non-technical, you can do these kind of things. As a developer or application writer, there are ways of helping the ordinary users to be more empowered to use the data better. So there's a whole level of technical development that could be done that is not.
Thank you very much, everybody. And if you are listening to this right now, just listen again. I know I'm going to be going home and listening again, because there's some really, really good information that is going to actually make me do something and not just think about something that's very important. Thank you.